It's the Tiltcast, episode 686, Game of the Year, part 2 from 2025 and 2026.
And this time, guys, we are hashing out the order of our top 10, talking about each game we played that ended up in that realm and why we think it belongs towards the top. And stay tuned to find out what made it to the top.
Welcome back. It's the Tiltcast, Game of the Year, part 2. It's an M-rated show. I'm Nas.
I'm Jason.
I'm Crazy.
Rusty.
And with the three of us, we're not doing any BS today. We're going straight through what we want to narrow down for Game of the Year and going to battle it out. Talk about some of our favorite things about the games that we played this year. And see what we end up with. We're gonna have to do a top 10 and then narrow it down to a top 5, huh?
Yeah, man.
Sure.
Sure.
All right. Well, Jason, our sheet, can we hide the stuff we're not even looking at?
Yeah, give me a second. I'm working on.
And then
I tried, stuff. But I am not. I don't have the. I don't have the foo. I don't have the Excel foo. he has the Excel foo.
I have all the foos.
If I did that, then it would delete a lot of foo. And I really don't want any, I don't want to be responsible realities of that. There. I said it. Not want to be responsible.
You know, it's okay. We don't want to be responsible. We don't always want to be responsible.
We do want to be responsible.
I want to be a kid forever. Forever.
All right. Well, here's what we are going to do. We are just going to go through our what we narrowed down as roughly our top 10, not ranked in any particular order yet, so we'll just start by going through them by release date. The first one we're going to start with is Stellar Blade.
I like that game a lot.
I mean, I really want to play it. I just don't have the funds or the time to...
I got it. I have it. It's installed. It's on my desktop. And I haven't played it.
I mean, like Bayonetta, but better, I will probably love the fuck out of it.
Honestly, it's a really good game, but if we're talking about like our game of the year, like here's what Stellar Blade is kind of like Bayonetta, kind of like Dark Souls, right? It's a faster paced game. You've got, I think, limited amount of dodges, but it wants you to parry and riposte a lot. Parry timing's pretty gracious, honestly. You can grind levels just like you could in a Souls game. It's got a decent story. Graphics are stellar, right? thinking about it, I think it's a must play of 2025. I don't think it's a top five. I think it's at least an honorable mention. And here's the thing. You guys haven't played it, so I know it's not going to win. So, you know, it is what it is. It's a good game, though. Like, I really like that game. It's just the creature design's great. The boss fights are great. It survived. If it was some ugly old man that was doing all the moves, it would be a great game, right? I mean, fortunately for people's eye holes, it isn't, but it's a good looking game regardless. It plays well and runs really well. So like it surprised the hell out of me. I just saw that there was a lot of hype about it. Started watching some people play it. And then I was like, you know what? That actually looks really fun. I'll give it a shot. I didn't have anything going on when that game came out. So I just released on PC last year, just chomped through it, like really chomped through it. I think you guys remember I put like 50 hours instead of like 2 weeks on that. Like I played it like a second job. So
it is downloaded. Like I said, I just need to. I have weird gaming funks where, like, I couldn't get away from, you know, from Elden Ring for a long freaking time. So it looks great. I just haven't got around to it.
Yeah, I just, that's what I say, like, looking through what we played, I'd be okay with it being an honorable mention. I don't know that it needs to be in the top five. Like, I can concede that.
Oh, gosh, here he goes with the concessions. You're going to tell me I need to concede something, too?
Yes, you must concede.
I'm going to...
Your soul.
Oh, gosh, you don't want it. It's a black shriveled thing. So.
All right, well...
So, yeah, that doesn't belong on the... Top five.
All right. Well, we're looking at next by release date is Marvel Spider-Man 2. Being the only one that played it with it getting its release in January last year.
Is that going to be a concession? Oh my god! You get to do the concession too.
Oh my god! I actually think the game could end up being part of our top five, but you know, there are a lot in our there are six games in our top 10 I didn't touch, so if it comes down to that, you know, I will concede. But it took everything from the first game and ramped it all up a notch, smoothed out a lot of the mechanics, made them better. Even deeper storyline, if you can imagine. Lots of emotional stuff that even matches Aunt May's death in the first one. And the new mechanics with introducing the symbiotes were really cool combat additions. I really liked this game. It is worthy of inclusion. That studio's just turning out bangers, man, and I think their work really kind of shines.
Yeah. Looks great. It's part of the get in on it now, because, you know, the trend of seeing these types of games actually pop up on PC is possibly, you know, days are numbered. But the Spider-Man games are, you know, with this one specifically, is great.
The Insomniac Spider-Man games are great.
Yeah. And so it really does deliver on the whole web-slinging, like, you know, vibe, right? You could just hours just going through town. Because it's just that much fun. That's something that they nailed pretty hardcore.
They nailed the swinging mechanics. They nailed the combat. They nailed voice lines. It's
definitely one of those games that I have on the list of things. Like, I could play it on a PlayStation. I could, you know, at any point. And I could pick it up on PC and play it right now. I just haven't. So,
I hear you there.
It is on my list. It is on my wish list. You did at least get me to do that much. When it's a game release like this, like God of War, Ragnarok, for instance, is another one of these, you know, these games. Came out on PlayStation. You can play it on the PC if you want to. You know, the Horizon games are another example. I tend not to pick it up on PC unless I really, really want to play that game. Otherwise, you know, I pick it up on, you know, on the PlayStation, you know, at the time that it, you know, came out.
Yeah. Well, I now have both Spider-Man games and the ones that matter.
the ones that matter.
Ghost of Tsushima on PC, and I'm just waiting to pick up God of War 2, because I still have yet to play that game either.
Ragnarok.
But that's the only other, that's the only other PS5 game I have yet to, PlayStation exclusive that's come to PC that I have yet to play. I've got both of the Horizon games. Oh, yeah, that is one that I played this year, too, that I totally left off the list. I finally played through Forbidden West. Again, another solid game, but I don't... we already talked about that in previous game of years, so... That one took a long time to come to PC, longer even than Spider-Man 2 or Ragnarok.
Yeah, the you know, the Horizon games were, you know, are great. The it came out in a weird time, though. I think there was, what was it that came out at the same time as the last Horizon, and it was something. It was one that, you know, Horizon handheld you so hard that when you played the other game, it was kind of like whiplash because it didn't hold your hand at all. And now I can't remember exactly what it was. But yeah, it was, that was one of my biggest critiques, and it's something that I wish I could, you know, could have turned off in Horizon Forbidden West, is the oh shit, I said that out loud moments. Like, I wonder if I could, you know, climb this ladder.
Yeah.
Duh.
Well, I mean, games that came out around the same time as Forbidden West, you're looking at Dying Light 2, Elden Ring.
Oh, it was Elden Ring. It's 100% hands down. That's what it was. Because I played Forbidden West at this, you know, right then, but I don't think I picked up Elden Ring right away. Because I wasn't, no, I know I didn't pick it up right away because it was my first FromSoft game. Go figure.
Your first FromSoft game, not called Dark Souls.
Dark Souls. No, I didn't. Well,
that didn't you didn't Dark immediately Souls. Quit on.
Yeah, I didn't give Dark Souls the time of day. I did own the original Dark Souls beforehand.
It has the distinction of being the first Souls-like that you actually didn't rage quit.
It was. And it actually opened my eyes to a completely, you know, new type of genre. I've put a lot of hours into those games, you know, now. And I can understand why people want a remake of
Bloodborne.
Bloodborne, yeah.
I agree. It's at 30 FPS and it looks like trash. Art style's the only thing that saves it. It's an Elden game now.
Yeah. But that's true. That's true. That said, before we get too far down the rabbit hole, we can move on. And the first game in our top 10 that actually released, or second game that released in 2025, let me correct myself, Monster Hunter Wilds.
Monster Hunter Wilds.
Ooh. The first game to have its original release in 2025.
I think it deserves an honorable mention. I don't think it deserves to be in the top five.
So, yeah, the the Monster Hunter Wilds, it has, it is a good game. It really is. And it had some issues with, I want to say the difficulty was, was a little light at the beginning. Like, it was very, very approachable from like a newbie standpoint.
Almost too approachable.
To the point where it was almost a snooze fest going through the hunts, because they weren't, you weren't getting knocked out nearly as much. It happened, but mainly because you fell stupid more than once.
Yeah, or you fell off something.
Yeah. It was plagued with a lot of issues, especially on PC, with performance. People were just, it was just chugging on people's hardware. I didn't have problems with that, and I felt like the pacing, while it was easy, and I could tell it was a lot easier than, say, portions of Rise, there wasn't really a hurdle, like a difficulty spike that you see mostly in all the previous other games. I didn't see a big difficulty spike in Wilds. So
honestly, everything in there is pretty approachable. Like, is that one complicated fight that you got to knock off armor towards the end of the game? There's generally some like really cool moments in that game. If I had more time, I'd probably go back and play it again. But like, you talk about like best games of last year, I don't think it hangs.
I will say that it's definitely in the top 10, but it's not. I don't think it's top 5 material. If it does end up in top 5 material, space for me, it's like at 5, because I kind of wish that it had more staying power out the gate, and that they hadn't kind of homogenized a lot of stuff. It made it made things a little too easy in ways, and it does hold your hand quite a bit. Like, if there was a point at the beginning of playing Wilds that I just screamed at the screen saying, "Let me do my hunts," because it has these little tutorial hunts where you're basically just like, auto walking as people talk about, the different areas and different monsters, and like, fucking just let me kill shit, So yeah, it does have some issues. I will concede that. How about that?
All right. So maybe that just sits in the top 10 as an honorable mention.
Top 10 as a, it was definitely a game of the year.
Okay. All right. Well, first Berserker Kazan. Dude, am the only one that's really solidly played. Have you played more of it?
I played more of it. This game is like, it feels,
it's like basically an anime. Sort of the Berserk, right?
Yeah, it feels like an anime, but
have you tried
it's
Big
also
Sword?
Kind of an action Souls-like, and it's so over the top in places, and it's just funky, man. It is a funky ass game, and it will push your shit in. If you don't fucking learn
play it on normal. Don't be a hero.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you don't have the perfect parries down.
I started on expert and I got stuck for a while to where I didn't play it for a while. And then I came back and I put it back to normal and then I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah. I mean, it is very much a, you know, you've got your parries in. Like, you have to get your timing down. Once you get the timing down, you can kind of, you can, well, it's actually really cool. Like, once you get the parries in, it feels good.
Or you need to get health steal. So, like, I've got a lot of two-handed abilities that give me health steal on kill.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps me, like, if I can get a brutal attack off, like, I heal like 40% of my health. Which is pretty insane.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice.
I don't end up like I've got a set that's squishier that does a little bit less damage, which is way more survivable, and I use that to grind through levels because I don't have to use my healing, whatever that is, you know, your flask essentially.
Right.
And if you don't have to mess with your flask, then it's not bad at all. I ended up
using a lot of the spear. And I kind of liked the distance that gave. But
I play hyper aggressive. Like, I take some damage from you, you're taking damage from me until I can get that brutal attack on. I can just whittle right through, like, just completely obliterate your guard so I can get that brutal attack in.
Yeah. The great swords, are kind of, you know, kind of good for that, like, high risk, high reward whop. People in the face with a big slab of iron.
It's satisfying.
It is really satisfying. Whereas you can kind of go in with like the, it's a sword and axe, if I remember correctly. It's been a minute. But it's basically the first kind of weapon that you end up picking up.
Yeah.
And then it's more kind of like blender. You know, you turn yourself into a fucking human blender at that point.
Yeah. It's whirlwind.
Yeah, whirlwind. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, it's a really great game. And if you like action, you know, games, you like, you know, it is a Souls-ish. I want to say it's an action game inspired by Souls.
Yeah, because it doesn't really, it doesn't play the same aside from the go get your health back thing.
Right, right. It is a action game that is inspired by Souls. You know, Souls games, and you know, it really wants you to feel badass whenever you play.
So, yeah, it wants you to feel badass after you master a few mechanics.
Right. So,
because for a while you suck. You
just succeed, but man, it will punish you up until that point. You know, so it is definitely worth a play. I liked it. I liked it a lot. The art style is great. You know, the sound design was pretty good. The bosses were challenging and continued to get even more challenging as time goes on. So it will make you.
I really like that arena, that boss that has the two arenas where you have to, like, after a certain point, he casts fire on the ground, essentially, and the whole ground lights on fire and you got to go up.
Yeah.
It took me a while to master him, but I started farming him for a year.
Yeah, there's some bosses that you love to hate. And then, of course, you know, there is you get to farm those bosses, for gear, which is a plus and a minus. I don't necessarily love the whole, you know, randomized loot thing, but I can understand why it's there. So,
you get components to make the boss sets though if they don't drop.
Yeah, and that's the saving grace behind it. That is basically like, oh hey, here's your
Your commander's eye. Yeah. Whatever the hell that is.
Your prize, which can be better than, you know, say like, you know, Monster Hunter that we just talked about. I mean, you can fight the same fucking monster 18 times and not get the one fucking item that you need to be able to build your next weapon or upgrade. That's not happened ever.
Right.
So yeah, it is a good game. I think it's probably, it's strong enough.
Is it kind of like a maybe in the top five?
It's possible. I mean, shit. It's better in my eyes than Monster Hunter Wilds.
I agree with that.
There's some really good contenders coming up. So
right.
Well,
speaking of which, here comes a heavy hitter. Clara Obscur Expedition 33.
It might be the best turn-based game I've ever played.
So, yeah. This
it's best Final Fantasy that's not Final Fantasy. It's better than Final Fantasy, especially the modern games.
This is what I wanted from it is the kind of game that I wanted Final Fantasy to be.
It's the game
Final Fantasy always goes, always went the action route. This brings turn-based, the turn-based RPG back into the forefront. And by adding the abilities to like do your perfect parries and perfect dodges, giving them two different timings, one that's more forgiving with the dodge versus the parry, and then rewarding people for getting, for basically watching how an enemy attacks. Like, it doesn't always give you the right timing right away, and it does juke you out, but that is also very Souls-like. Like, how many times is a boss fucking wound up and then stopped at the very apex of their swing, their pullback for a swing, just that half second to make you roll, and then they go through and hit you, go through with the attack and it hits you. That is, that is the enemy type. That is basically everything in Expedition 33. You have to learn that. And that makes it more than just any old, turn-based RPG.
I think it had like two really big things going for it. Like you touched on, like it's the Final Fantasy game people have wanted Square to make since Final Fantasy X, right? And they know that fans of that genre are adults now, right? They know that they're in their 30s, 40s. That's the kind of game they want. So they wrote a pretty mature story around it that would appeal to people that were older, that it wasn't a coming of age story, right? Story's really good. Music's really good. The graphics, of course, are good, right? But the draw is not just the graphics. The draw is that combat style, right? A mix of classic turn-based combat that a lot of us like, with some extra spice thrown in with the perfect parries and dodges, which basically gave you additional actions that you could do on your turn, which was a big deal. And then you got basically limit breaks on top of that, right?
Yeah. Well,
I loved the combat. I loved the fact that they didn't fall into the temptation going and making it too grindy. You know what? Actually, it doesn't have a bad story either. So,
I think the story is highly engaging. I paid attention.
Yeah.
And I don't pay attention to story most of the time.
The whole idea, the whole premise behind it is like,
it is the second most engaging story I played all year.
I agree with that.
Gives you a reason. Like, that is one of the things that, that caught me off guard at the very beginning of the game, is because it really doesn't tell you it doesn't tell you what the whole premise is until it happens. And then you're like, oh fuck. That's wicked. And then of course, immediately after that, you go on the expedition and everybody's like just thinking that it's going to be hunky dory. And then all of a sudden the fucking doors blow off, dude. It goes nuts. It goes hard fast. And you're now looking at, it's easy like you said, this is, you know, made for, you know, people our age, right? It's easy to go and, you know, remove 10 years from my life, right? Just think back to me 10 years ago and say, would I have been able to do this? You know, would I have been able to like internalize everything that is going on? And these characters there, they don't go through like, they don't go through that and just not be completely, you know, unfazed by it. They're all affected by what happens when they go on the expedition. And it's just crazy how good this game is. And it came out of left field. Like, it was not on my radar.
Yeah, it wasn't on my
all.
No, nobody was expecting this game.
So, for it to be as good as it is from, from out of left field, it defined what you could do if you had passion in your games, which is something that has been totally lacking in the video game industry in the last few years.
It's just, well, it's in the AAA space. Good. Like, they might as well be made by robots.
Yeah, just having a give a shit to be able to like take an idea and just do the absolute best you can with it. I think they nailed it.
Oh, they absolutely did.
It is just a really great game.
Well, I think it belongs in the top five.
Oh, yeah. So moving on, Doom the Dark Ages, another really good release from this year.
My vote's honorable mention.
It's in my personal top five, but then again, I kind of rated it quite a bit higher than you guys did. I loved the overall balance of the game.
I think you're the only one that finished it, though, right?
Yeah, I probably am. I loved the how they crafted the story around the game. I thought the cinematics felt purpose-built this time instead of kind of like a afterthought, which they kind of felt like with Doom Eternal. They kind of felt like they were shoved in at the end.
Well, Doom was never really story heavy.
I really liked the... Yeah, but they're trying something. And they're trying a little bit of story. And they expanded on a lot of what was set up with Eternal and the first game. But I think the real mastercraft there is in the execution. Once again, solid. I like that they slowed down the gameplay. It wasn't this mad dash and abuse throughout the game to get through levels. The amount of tacticality that they inserted with the shield mechanics, etc. I loved it. You know, am I going to be mad if it's not in the Tiltcast's top five? No, but it is definitely a top 10 game, and it was, I think it was a step in the right direction for Doom as a whole.
I don't disagree with that.
It's better than Eternal, but only because Eternal basically devolved into, air dashing everywhere.
Yeah.
So Doom 2016 was basically what we wanted from a Doom game, and it's just great overall, right? That's what started this whole revolution. Like, yes, Doom could actually survive on today's, hardware. Great. Perfect. Doom Eternal decided that, I wanted to.
We needed more air dashing, and it needed to be more punishing.
Right. Well, we wanted to take Doom and basically make it as fast as, you know, the games that came after Doom, which was like Unreal Tournament. You know, the kind of like skating and the speed and the air dashes and a bunch of like, you know, different like rocket jumps and didn't need any of that.
Basically, Quake.
Doom. Yeah, we want to. Yeah,
they made the Doom Slayer. It the closest I could ever think of was they made the Doom Slayer, move like a Titan on speed,
way faster. it was nuts, like how fast that was going. I think what they did was, you know, with Doom the Dark Ages, in my opinion, they slowed him down just a hair too much. Because now he trods through the levels with like he's a fucking walking tank. Thump, thump, thump. Great. Perfect. If he jumps from a high from a high height, he hits the ground so hard that he kills the little demons around him. Perfect, great, awesome. It's just a tiny bit too slow for the amount of walking that you run, have in each one of the levels.
The areas are really big. The areas are really big.
Yeah,
I got too much FOMO in that game, like looking around for everything and like not focusing enough on the stompy, stompy, blow stuff up.
Right.
All I focused on was the stompy, stompy, blow shit up. And I didn't go looking for skulls or nothing. So I ran into it.
I was looking for like the gold for the upgrades and stuff like that.
It was
like,
that too that was driving me.
Like, okay, there's a lot of hidden shit, and I know there's a lot of hidden shit in the Doom games, but most of the hidden shit that you found in the previous Doom games was not necessarily tied to your progression. This had, shit that was hidden that was tied to your progression.
Yeah, the gold.
And that kind of felt bad in a way, because now I'm looking for these, treasure chests in off-the-beaten-path areas, and what I really want is to kill demons, and have like crazy battles like those that you see in the trailers. But you don't see that most of the game is just trudging through fucking secret, looking for secrets. That's what really killed it for me. It's just, it didn't keep the pace going, and it turned into, it turned into big battles and then 5 minutes of thump, 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 thump as you're going from point A to point B. So
that's fair.
It's just, it hits, and when it hits hard, but there's a lot more misses. And,
that's fair.
Yeah. It just needed, I don't necessarily need 100%, like, it didn't need to hit me all the time, but there needed to be a little bit more, battle, 30 seconds of downtime, new battle, 30 seconds of
right.
downtime, new battle,
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. I get you. And I can somewhat agree on that. There was a little bit too much space between fighting. That said, moving on, Tainted Grail, The Fall of Avalon.
God, I wish you guys had played this. This is the best thing that Bethesda will never release.
It's gonna get played. I feel bad that it
released one like
talked about nearly as much at this point as it would.
I talked about it a lot.
Well, like outside of having another opinion, the reality here is there's a lot of shit that that I didn't get to play that I wanted to play over the course of the last, few months.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. Like, this is one of the games that I really wanted to play.
It's basically Skyrim with kind of like a Nordic Celtic folklore background with, with dual wield magic / swords, kind of build your own character. Pretty decent story. Lots of side quests.
I played this instead of Avowed.
Oh, hell yeah. This is twice as good as Avowed.
Right.
So Avowed just looks better.
I wasted time on Avowed, and that could have been played on this game.
Yeah, I tried to.
Yeah, I feel like the 20 hours I spent in Avowed were based.
Yeah, you could spend 45 or 50 hours in this game and get way more out of it, honestly. Like, way more than every game. When I say the best game Bethesda will release, it's like basically from after Skyrim, Bethesda started really going downhill. And they haven't released another, Elder Scrolls game, obviously, but yeah.
Thanks, Todd.
So it's, yeah. Right.
I gotta give Todd Howard some shit.
I mean, he deserves it.
Apparently, they're more of a media company now. So,
yeah, because
apparently, they don't give a shit about making good games.
Money.
I mean, because they couldn't put what was that stupid space game we all fell off?
Starfield.
They couldn't put Starfield together, but damn, they can work with Amazon and get Fallout Season 1 and 2 like. Perfect.
God.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Show's so good.
Starfield could have been so much better, too.
But, anyways, I think you guys should have played it.
Anyways.
It's definitely going to be in my top 5, if not my top 3. Would love to see it in the top, but I'm the only one that played it, so I know it's not. So, I guess I'll have to make another concession.
Oh, no. Here's that word again.
We'll see. We'll see when it comes down to it. That said, I think we can move on, not spend too much time there. Death Stranding 2.
Okay, that's my number 3. I liked it better than Death Stranding 2. Than Death Stranding OG. It's such a good game. It's Kojima-esque Kojima. It is more Death Stranding. It is a better version of the last game. If you like the last game, it's a better version of that with better combat, better traversal methods, more diverse biomes, a lot more than kind of just going in a big straight line. This is kind of like all over the place. So it goes in a big circle. And they say it's not always the destination, it's the journey. It's a little of both, but the journey is really good. The in-engine cutscene stuff is also pretty phenomenal. The direction on all of that stuff on your moment to moment plus your, cinematic moments is just huge. Like, this should be on a lot of people's list, and it didn't. And I'm surprised. Like, I don't even know what else. I know there's a couple games that could beat it out. That's why it's in my top 3. But I don't know how this wasn't in the top 10, at least worldwide.
So there's a lot of people like myself that are just waiting for it to come out on PC.
Yeah, wait a week.
And that is, it's on, on the list of things for me to play. I'm just waiting for it to come out on PC is all.
Yeah, you'll be getting that on PC, and then Crimson Desert is coming out? Crimson
Desert.
Yeah, and I'm way more hyped about that right now, so I've already beat Death Stranding, so Crimson Desert it is for me.
Well, It's gonna be these two games are probably gonna get me into into summer, and then of course summer being summer around here, I tend to either play a MMO or I am outside, and it's probably gonna be I'm going to enjoy the heck out of the outdoors just because that's it. This game is going to get played. And the only reason why I haven't played it yet is because I didn't have my PlayStation 5 hooked up for the longest time. So
that's understandable.
I still don't. It's in my closet.
Right now. I look forward to playing it on PC too. I really do. That said, we can go ahead and move on and talk about Abiotic Factor.
It's another personal top for me. I really like that game. I'm almost at the very end of it, right? Life has happened. I've been exceptionally busy. This year is going to be challenging, I think, in coming up with this list. As I can already tell you, it's March, and my outside of gaming life is pretty freaking busy. So I may be spending the next couple of months catching up on stuff plus Crimson Desert, but Abiotic Factor is really good. It's one of those games I think I'm going to try to get my girlfriend into, since she likes survival crafting games a lot. So just got to figure out how to local co-op this. Probably Nucleus. If you haven't heard of it, Nucleus is an amazing program. But Abiotic Factor is a love letter to Half-Life plus survival crafting games. It's got a lot of like MDK level of crafting. So MDK 2, I don't know if anybody here is old enough to remember that, but like you had like a toaster gun and all sorts of dumb bullshit. It has crafting like that, right? Like you make a crossbow out of like pencils and rubber bands and rulers and all sorts of stuff. And that's your like crossbow. So it's a lot of dumb bullshit like that mixed with a whole lot of like Half-Life 2 graphics and an underground city with aliens that teleport in. So like it feels very Half-Life-y. While also kind of coming across as survival horror plus, I don't know, you got like traps and all sorts of stuff you set up for your base, which is really cool. I really like Abiotic Factor. I don't know, Rest, am I missing something?
It's got all of that. Plus, it really kind of, has you think about like, oddly enough, a day-night cycle. Going into night, you have to be prepared for, stuff with batteries, because you can't really do... I got stuck. I got stuck because I couldn't craft, at night, and I really needed to craft. Very first thing I did was, like, at night, the power goes out. So you can't use the plugs on the wall to power your stuff. You have to run it off of battery. And there's some places where you can go get your battery charged at any time. I didn't have all the stuff I needed to craft a battery at the very beginning of the game. I needed it and I couldn't do it. And that was kind of, it kind of sucked. it gets pretty deep. Like, inventory management's kind of a thing too.
Right.
Grabbing filing cabinets just so I had big chests. But you also use the filing cabinets as components to make other stuff. It's really good. The game does have like a lot of really good stuff in it. It's probably, it can be a little much in some places, but it also is, you end up branching out and doing a bunch of other things, man. It's, honestly, I didn't get as far as, as just, I really haven't. But what I've seen of it so far, I've done got into it. I just need to like get through it, And it is rough sometimes, man. It kicks your ass.
Oh yeah, it's not an easy game.
Boy, you get cornered and you get freaking hurt. You have issues, man. Fucking, you got a bleeding cut, broken leg, and you're like fucking limping back to your,
and no bandages or medicine or anything to heal yourself other than food.
Right. You're like, And then all of a sudden, you know, your guy's like, I'm pretty peckish. I'm like,
I gotta take a dump. I could use the facilities.
I could use the facilities. Yes, it's always really. Yeah, it's just. It's a good game. Like, the more you play it, the more you kind of like. If you've played Half-Life 2, you fall into this being a Half-Life game subconsciously.
Yeah.
Because it's so close to this, Half-Life.
Yeah, the setting is basically a different take on Half-Life. It could have been a skin of a Half-Life game almost with a different story but similar events.
I like to think of Abiotic Factor as the game that they pitched to Valve as a Half-Life game, and they couldn't actually get it, you know, get the name. So they're like, okay, we're just going to change a couple things and we're going to do it as our own thing, you know, but it 110% could have been, you know, Black Mesa and Half-Life, you know? So it's definitely good. Probably, it is the best of the the survival style games that came out, you know, in 25 for sure.
I agree. Let's move on, and then what my game plan is let's kind of like get our thoughts together for a second after this, and then come back and make sure we nail down that top five.
Okay.
Because I think this next one's a pretty big hitter. What's the last one we have on the list, Jason?
Last one is Dispatch.
Yeah, that one's easy. Yeah. You were a doubter at first, Rusty, and then I think you got to playing it. You're like, oh, yeah, I know what you guys are talking about. That game's pretty good.
So what it came down to was I watched the trailers for Dispatch before I picked it up. I heard you guys talking about it. I watched the trailers and I'm like, this is basically done in the same animation style as a Invincible or that kind of animation style. Like it looked like a show. You know, it looked like you were I was watching something that, you know, easily could have been on Amazon Prime or Netflix or anything like that. That is really good for, you know, for a game of this style.
It's so good. So like my girlfriend had heard about it, but didn't really know what it was. So I was like, think of it as like one of the Walking Dead games. She's like, oh, so it's just like a narrative driven game where you like make choices. I was like, yeah, but there's a little more to it. It's like, how so? And I was like, the story's really good. She's like, what do you mean? I was like, at a certain point, I forgot I was playing a game. So I let her play. She's like, are you sure you want me to just play the game and you watch? It's like, yes. She's like, why are you acting so weird? It's like, just play it. I want to see what choices you make. Mm-hmm. And so she played for the whole first episode one night. She's like, I want to play more. I was like, yeah, but it's like 2 a.m. We got work tomorrow. So yeah. It's pretty, once it locks you in, it just locks you in. It's a very engaging story. The characters are pretty likable. The dialogue back and forth is really good. Essentially, if you boil it down, it's a story based game where you make decisions in the story, and the physical stuff you do is interacting and dispatching superheroes. And by part of that involves several mini games. But the real draw to it is the interaction between the characters, and the interaction between the characters are so well written. Like, it's easily the most engaging video game story I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, it's, and the stuff that you do during the dispatch, you know, has effects outside of that. So let's say, I mean, for me, it was like, the dispatching portion of it is probably the weakest portion of the game.
Yeah, the story is the strongest part. The story is, and you never say that about a video game.
Yeah. Especially you saying that. That's, you know, the,
I'm all about the mechanics.
The story is near perfect. Like,
if this
as far as execution, I'm not saying there aren't flaws to it, because you know there
it was
there
made by certainly people.
Are, yeah. But those flaws are like Justin said, these are people. They're very much human flaws, and they don't impact how the story flows or make you necessarily feel negative about one thing or the other. You know, like, perfect example, I'm not gonna be spoiling anything for anybody who's not played past the demo, etc. You know, in that first episode, Blood Blazer's hitting on you like she's not even in a damn relationship. Right?
Mm-hmm.
She's hitting on Mecha Man. So, you know, that right there, flawed character. And I love it. They wrote these characters flawed, and it plays great.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of Invincible, I mean, it's very, very reminiscent of the like how the characters are, play out in Invincible, because they play, you know, those characters. Yeah, they're superheroes. Yeah, they do the whole superhero thing, whatever. But they also are like flawed human beings.
They're very human beings. Like, yeah. It's not to the level of like the Boys, because the Boys, all of them are just dicks.
Yeah, that's the other extreme, I think. But
I think that's why I fell off the Boys, is like they try too hard to make them unlikable. Like, they're right. Beyond human. They're just assholes.
Yeah.
That particular book, and by extension that series, focuses on making people intentionally look like the worst of humanity.
Yeah, and I don't.
So it just turns into the slightly less terrible parts of humanity fighting the absolute worst parts of humanity.
Yeah, it feels a little bit nihilistic, which is why I don't like it as much as I thought I would. And being a Kripke thing, like, it's kind of sad. But I digress. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Dispatch, where I think the balance is...
about Dispatch, where the balance is excellent.
Yeah.
Right? You have some genuinely good people who just made bad choices. You have some real assholes. And... and they all play off of each other and play against each other perfectly. This game doesn't succeed without the writers and the excellent cast. And the cast really made this game what it is.
Yeah,
it's
the involvement of Critical Role definitely helped them. Definitely helped them give a good balanced story. I think the fact that it's approachable, half-assed believable, that this would be like how it would work if,
like I said,
were dispatched.
As far as the writers and developers, like, this is the team that gave us Walking Dead season 1, season 2, and Wolf Among Us.
I didn't realize it was that team.
This is absolutely their best.
And the games you just mentioned are like...
This even blows season 1 of The Walking Dead and The Wolf Among Us out of the water.
And those are the only Telltale games that I actually like. So that's
right.
That really tracks as to why I like this.
This, and then it was also helped by, helped to get off the ground. I don't think that they had much... in the way of like creative input, but Critical Role basically made this game happen. You know?
Oh yeah, they definitely helped it over the finish line. They were, Laura Bailey and Travis Willingham were already They were a couple weeks into recording their voice lines for the game when the team basically said, "That's it, we can't afford to keep going," and Critical Role just kind of swooped in,
yeah,
and saved the game. And thank God they did, because this is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
That there's no other word I can use. This game is a masterpiece, and if you have not played it yet, you need to.
Well,
definitely worth.
With that being said, do we want to take a quick break and gather our thoughts as to how we want to wrap this together in a bow?
Sure.
Yep, because we got some personal lists to put together and a couple other things to hash out. So we'll be back.
All right, be right back. And we're back.
Woohoo!
We
had a little bit of a break.
Yeah, I had to figure out.
Did some calculations.
Yep. And that's the end of the show. Just kidding.
That's it. So I think I'm going to start this by saying what will not be in our top five, but you know, still in our top 10 and definitely deserve honorable mentions. Tainted Grail, The Fall of Avalon's the first one of those at number 6.
Such a good game.
That's a really great game. With just Rusty and I didn't really get to play that one yet. Abiotic Factors at 7. Monster Hunter Wilds was at 8. Doom the Dark Ages ended up at 9, and Stellar Blade at number 10.
Somehow I'm always happy with this.
I know, right?
It kind of matches.
It's because in the end, we tie break with our own personal top fives.
Yeah.
And that gives somebody a little bit of something in the top five. Always, that's kind of where our editorial style lies. So that said, I say we before we reveal the overall Tiltcast top 10, let's talk about where we ranked some of these in our own personal top fives, the ones that didn't make the first five in the list. For me, the first one of those is Doom the Dark Ages. It was my number 5. Definitely, the 5th best game I played all year that actually made the top 10 that didn't end up excluded for one reason or another. I already waxed poetically about how much I really liked how they slowed down the gameplay and how I liked how they were trying to expound the story. Just a really solid game. And then 4th best game I played on year, but got obviously left out of the top 5 or top 10 because, well, it was in our top 10 last year. Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2.
That's fair.
That game was good. I wish I'd been able to play it when it came out the fall of 2024. I just didn't have the fundage at the time and ended up playing it later, but dang, that game's good.
I agree. Would play multiplayer.
And then for you, Justin, really, you're only ones not well, in the well, podcast's top five. You got Tainted Grail and Abiotic Factor.
Yeah, and
honestly, and really, those are only victims because we just didn't, Rusty and I didn't get around to playing them yet.
Yeah, I mean, Rusty played some Abiotic Factor. Like, that would actually be a great game if we ever did another what do you call it? The charity thing, an extra life. Yeah. Abiotic Factor would be great for that. I think it'd be a great game to play with y'all at some point too, because it's also on Game Pass.
Y'all.
Yeah, Abiotic Factor, yeah, it was a really, really, really solid game, and I intend on finishing it at some point soon or starting it all over again, because I now have learned things that I didn't know before. And Tainted Grail, man, you guys just missed out. Like, Tainted Grail is so good. You really have to pick that up. And I'm considering, there's a pretty full release schedule that's about to hit this year of good things, or at least it seems to be good things. And if there's any misses, I'll probably go back and play the DLC that just dropped for Tainted Grail a couple months ago. But that game is basically Skyrim. Just honestly, in a lot of ways, it's as good as Skyrim. You really should try it.
As good as Skyrim the first couple times we played it.
Right.
Skyrim has not aged well.
No, but it's the same. It's in that same realm of like what you remember Skyrim being. That's how Abiotic or Tainted Grail is.
And then for Rusty, it was Abiotic Factor and Monster Hunter Wilds. Abiotic Factor was your 5, and Hunter Wilds was your 4.
I think Abiotic Factor would be good for, you know, for a extra lifestyle, you know, setup, because I can't stop myself from being the camp mom when it comes to these types of games. I tend to organize things in the chests and make sure that everybody has their stuff. And I mean,
and crafting and cooking become your thing.
Yep. And that would be totally me. I'd be cool with that. And Monster Hunter Wild, you know, like I said before, you know, I think it's a great game. It's gotten some flack for what it is and how approachable it was, and I say was because they have made the game harder.
And Bikini Armor DLCs. Let's not forget those.
Yeah, there's that. There's the we've made the game harder really just means they've included a lot more one-shot mechanics, which suck.
Yeah, I agree.
It just sucks. You need to be able to have some, like, you got to have some wiggle room, some leeway, and some of the some of the stuff that they just put in there is like, yeah, okay, this shit's gonna one shot you. So you have to play perfectly, which it's not what I play the game for. So.
Well, it's like we've always waxed on this show. You know, difficulty's one thing. Fucking punishing you just to punish you is something else.
And that's what Capcom, unfortunately, is like, oh, as you guys want hard, you know, then we're going to do a bunch of this one-shot mechanic bullshit. And I don't want hard. What we want is something that's less, you know, that takes a little bit longer than 2 minutes.
Right.
You know, we want something that is...
It's a strategy.
Yeah, something that actually adds some extra layers to shit, right? You could do like 3 or 4 Monster Hunt, you know, and have one of those Monster Hunt, you know, have it be like, oh, in the middle of the hunt, like on the third monster that, you know, that pops up, you end up having a random like apex come in and, you know, just fuck that one up. And now you have to deal with the apex, you know,
or have your damage resistances and stuff on the monsters scale more appropriately.
Or, you know, yeah, there's a lot of different options. Like, they could do. They've got a whole system where you can change your weapon out on the fly. Like you can have a different weapon on your secret and just go pick up your pick up a different weapon. Like you don't really use it to its fullest extent. And I think that is one of the biggest issues that it, you know, that it has. Just it fails to capitalize on what it has.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's talk about what we each had in our personal slot at number three. And for me, that was Marvel's Spider-Man 2. To be fair, this was the first really great game that I played all year. Because I jumped on Clair Obscura a little bit later. But man, that, like I said, it's everything from Insomniac's first Spider-Man just dialed up, and I just loved every minute of it. And Justin, what did you have at three?
I had Death Stranding 2. I think if Expedition 33 did the, I won't say the others, but I think if some other games hadn't come out, Death Stranding 2 would have won. Here's the thing, like Death Stranding 2 is a little bit obtuse, right? And I think the other games like scratched an itch that Death Stranding just couldn't scratch. And I think that's the only reason why it's where it's at. But is it a really good game? Hell yeah. Death Stranding 2 is...
Oh, yeah, it is.
Death Stranding 2 is amazing.
And, well, here's my thing with Kojima games. Their stories are always good, a little bit out there. They're good. But Expedition 33 and Dispatch just did a level of storytelling that I don't think any Kojima game could have touched.
I think that Kojima is
a little.
So
he's a little crazy.
A Kojima game, a Kojima game. I know what I'm getting into, in a way. So I'm gonna get into like something that's almost paramilitary, something that has a take on like the Western. Government in some way, shape, or form, because that is there is a take in just about every Kojima game. You can take it however you want, but there's hot takes in there. And it's gonna be a sci-fi-esque story that is pulled just barely askew from what you would expect. And I think that that level of I'm going to tell the story, but it's going to be askew. It's going to be a little weird. It's going to, you know, it's going to affect you in a different way if I tell you this and make this your headcanon. You know, that is basically how Death Stranding worked. And like Metal Gear Solid or Metal Gear 5 was, I mean, Flying Blue Whale, anyone? There's things about how he tells a story that I'm there for because of how he tells the story, you know? So I really want to, I've wanted to play Death Stranding 2 since the game released. I just didn't want to buy it twice. That's
right.
I just could not let that game go. I'll probably buy it on PC eventually too.
I just didn't want to buy it twice. And that just comes down to a lot of shit's changed in the last year. Or so I was being a little frugal.
Nope. 100% get that. And then what did you have at three, Rusty?
Oh, I had this little game called First Berserker Kazan. This game that one snuck up on me too. When I saw it at first, it looked like an anime. Like, it really did. It just, I watched the, you know, the trailer for it. I'm like, God damn, that looks like an anime. And if it was, if that was an anime, I'd watch the shit out of it. Like, it caught my attention immediately based off of its look, its presentation. Just makes you want to play that game.
It does kind of look like the anime version of Conan.
It has that anime comic book style feel to it, but it also is really gorgeous when it, you know, and very tight. Like some of the tightest gameplay I've had in an action game in a while. It makes Elden Ring feel floaty, if that makes any sense.
Because it looks a lot smoother.
And it's kind of jarring if you go from, like, you know, a game like Elden Ring to, you know, First Berserker Zone, because, you know, it is a much faster game. And in a way, Elden Ring is actually a little more forgiving on taking hits. Whereas Kazan, you kind of have to build around if you're going to take hits or trade, versus, you know, really master your parries and dodges. So it's, you know, it is a different style of game. I think it's great, and it's definitely one of those games that you should get your hands on, especially if you like good action games.
I mean, I had it rated. I just had a hard time deciding if it needed. It'd probably be my number six.
It belongs. Like, there's a reason why that game resonates with me, and I think I'm gonna go through. It is a game that I didn't complete, but I mean, a lot of people don't complete games these days. Yeah, it is. It's also one of the games that's installed on my, on my hard drive. Like, games that stay around after I've fallen off of them and stay on the hard drive, I mean, those are games that I know I'm going to go back to. Yeah. Because, I mean, there's games I've fallen off of hard and they get uninstalled and they become like super back burner games. This isn't one of them.
Yeah, they become your Steam e-waste.
Yeah.
That said, I think that leads us perfectly into the fact that these three games are what make up the bottom of our top five. At number five, for the podcast as a whole, we've got the first Berserker Kazan. Spider-Man 2 ended up at number four, and Death Stranding ended up at number three.
And these are these are basically on the same level. Like,
they're all almost ties.
They're almost tied. Yeah. Yeah. These things are really, really close. Like, if you take those three, you could mix them up at any one, you know, in any order, and they would be perfectly good. Like, all of those, just consider that, you know, those three games as, you know, rank three, right?
Yep.
Because they're all great games.
They are. They really are. They're all three really good experiences. You know, if you haven't played either one of them, give it a try. Give it a try. That said, shall we kill everybody's anticipation and reveal what we had at number two?
Yeah, I think so.
This is our number two across the board.
Which means that this is actually going to, I think, is a little bit controversial.
I think it will be just because of what all of the publications put out there in December, right? Everybody had this as their number one. It is Clair Obscur Expedition 33 is our number two.
That's because our number one was so strong.
Yeah, here's why I think it was number one, and a lot of publications, etc.
I think it was due to pressure.
Didn't have it as number two. One was pressure. Two is, I don't know that a traditional publication is really going to come out and say that a 14-hour long story game is their number one.
I think it's completely different. I think what happened was Expedition 33 got more eyeballs on it, the amount of time that it was in consideration. That whereas Dispatch was right at the end of the year. Like, a lot, you know, historically, games that come out right at the end of the year, like in October, November, December, they tend to get snubbed a lot.
It's because journos, for whatever reason, can't sit down and play them.
Right. They get snubbed a lot just because of the time frame that they drop in. And
yeah, that's true. I forget. It was
but I played
it was October 22nd on PC, November 12th on PS5.
Right. So it didn't get in front of eyeballs. And especially
did we mention our number one yet?
Not yet.
No, we didn't, but I mean, that does leave only one. It's kind of obvious. Our number one is Dispatch.
Yeah,
it's too good.
Everything about it is the perfect fit. Is Dispatch the perfect game in every single component? No, definitely there could be, the dispatching component of the gameplay. There are tweaks you could do to improve that. Depending on your opinion, there could be more or there could be less. I actually think it'd be nice if, for example, you have a difficulty setting that adds or removes, you know, makes that part of it longer, etc., right? That'd be actually a really great way to scale the game. But aside from that, the storytelling is great. Is it going to hold everyone's attention span? It probably not. Depends on the kind of person. Because I mean, let's face it, the cinematics are long. You know, playing this game really is like watching a movie. A movie that you're occasionally interacting with. But I actually think that was one of the nicer parts about it, is in the cinematic animations, it wasn't like they didn't feel the need to go, okay, it's been 5 seconds. We need to give you a line of dialogue you can choose, or we need to give you a quick time event. Right? There were definitely areas of those cinematics that they just let breathe. And I appreciate the choice.
Yeah, immensely. And some of the quick time events are kind of hard on the timing, but like it's really more about the story, and the story was just so strong. Like I said, probably the most enjoyable game story I've ever had. I couldn't put it down for 3 days. I ended up taking off a day to finish the game and get a big chunk of it out. Okay. Which I haven't done in a long time. I was just that invested.
I played that game twice in 3 days.
Yeah. So, Jason, who never has time.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, it was one of those things. It was fairly easy. It hit at a perfect time where, where my work schedule was a little bit lighter, etc. So, I ended up being able to, play it on my lunch too, etc. And it's not, it just really wasn't that big of a burden. And I played it instead of watching any TV, right? Because that's usually, watching a couple episodes of something or a movie with my wife or the kids is usually part of my daily life too, right? Spend time with them in one way or another. But it also fell right at the perfect time where there wasn't a whole lot going on with Boy Scouts. There wasn't a whole lot going on with Girl Scouts. So I just had the time, and it hooked me so hard that I couldn't put it down.
I don't blame you.
And I really wanted to, once I finished that first playthrough, I was immediately like, I have to go through this again and make some different choices just to see what could be different.
Yeah.
There's not just two or three tiny choices that can change your outcome. There are a couple dozen choices throughout that game that can change the direction of a character in your story and lead to a different path, because the game is so character focused. There's not like three or four endings for Dispatch. There's like eight of them. And there's like, just with two key characters alone, Sonar and, I forget the name of the other chick, Coop.
Coop, yeah.
Those two characters alone have like four different endings apiece, as part of the overall ending. So it's, the level of detail and care that Ad Hoc put into this game and these characters, I really feel like is something that should be celebrated. And I feel like it really was, like, on social media, etc.
Yeah.
It just didn't get a whole lot of love from the news outlets.
There's a lot of things that can be said about Dispatch. In that case, like what I had brought up before is just the timing and things. But if you look back at what we look at, just as a group here at Tiltcast, is we really do like our indies. And these two games, Dispatch and Expedition 33, they popped up. They became like they popped up on the radar, and you could immediately take a look at, both of these games and be like, oh, these are games you're going to play. And the fact that they were, that Expedition 33 got, as high as it did, I think it's just a testament to A, the craftsmanship behind the game, and B, it ticked all the right boxes at the right time, and there was enough time for people to chew through it to be able to like really appreciate it. Whereas I feel like, your Choose Your Own Adventures, yeah, they're good. The Telltale style games are really good. Like, those have their place, but they always tend to get snubbed for one reason or another because people say, oh, it's replay value. Oh, it's this or oh, it's that, or I would much rather just watch this as a Netflix special or something like that. The thing is it was so good I forgot that it was a game.
Yeah, I just,
and that is,
yeah, it, that's my point. I mean, yeah. It's so good that I won't lie, guys, I was pretty down last week. That game is so good that in my down I was like, I'm going to go back to these characters that I love.
Yeah.
And that says something.
That's fair.
Yeah. It is definitely. You know, I was kind of surprised that it didn't get, you know, as much airtime in, you know, publications as it did. But
now that you said it, though, Rusty, I 100%, you're right. A lot of it was probably really release window. Because same thing happened to Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that was a really good game.
Last year. It came out the tail end of 2023. Didn't make anybody's lists in 2024. Or 2024 game a year. Or 2023 game a year. 2024 game a year. Wow.
Yeah.
I said it came out late 2023. It came out late 2024. And it got snubbed. I feel like Clair Obscur Expedition 33 for me was last year's Indiana Jones. The only difference is it got the earlier release. So it got all the publication time. Reviewers got to sit with that game for a while. And so it got a lot of love. I completely agree with that.
Yep.
But man, guys, Dispatch was just so good. If you've not played it because you've not traditionally liked that Telltale style of game, I'm going to say pick it up and get into it when you're not really feeling like playing a video game, but you can't decide what you want to watch on TV, because it will fill that need too. And the story is that good. And I think the story is that good because Ad Hoc originally started developing the scripting for the game as a TV series.
Yeah. Yeah. It shows.
And it shows. So, I mean, this is like is it eight episodes or six?
I think it's eight.
Yeah. The eight episodes of that game really play like 10 or 12 really good episodes of the series.
The series on par with, with like Critical Role style, or
actually it's even better than that. Cause they're not, they're not just ad-libbing the entire time. Right.
It is Invincible.
It
married it, with like,
It is riding on par with the Fallout series. It is riding on par with Invincible and the Boys. It is riding on par with even some more of the mainstream really great shows of the past, like a Supernatural. Not all of it is great, but back then TV was 20 episodes a season and you had some clankers, right? But overall, the writing for that series was excellent. There aren't too many people who you find that have watched it that don't say the same. Or stuff like The Walking Dead or like Breaking Bad. I mean, it is that level of writing that they did trying to develop a series and ended up making it a Telltale style game because that's the other medium that they knew. And if they couldn't sell it as a series, they were going to make it themselves. They excelled.
I agree.
So awesome. So that said, guys, that is our top 10. Just One more time from the bottom. At 10, we had Stellar Blade. At 9, we had Doom the Dark Ages. At 8, we had Monster Hunter Wilds. At 7, we had Abiotic Factor. At 6, we had Tainted Grail, The Fall of Avalon. At 5, we had the first Berserker Kazan. At 4, we had Marvel's Spider-Man by Insomniac. Spider-Man 2, sorry. And at 3, we had Death Stranding 2. At number 2, we had what really is a number 1 game, Clair Obscur Expedition 33, that was just slightly edged out by the excellent storytelling of Dispatch at number 1.
Yeah. Dude, it was pretty good. A pretty good year. I am definitely... There's games in there that I'm going to, you know, going to be playing, you know, even this year, maybe replaying, because I didn't give them as much time as I really could have or should have. But man, that is a stacked year, and I think we're looking at, another great year this year too.
Yeah. You know, according to everything, they are now working on season 2 for Dispatch alongside looking to hire additional staff so that they can work on the Critical Role title at the same time. I'm sure that is exciting for the guys at Ad Hoc. I'd love to see the Critical Role game too, but man, sometimes you gotta strike while the iron is hot and just follow up your new hotness. Either way, I look forward to their next outing.
I do too.
Good stuff.
All right, guys. With that, find us at thetiltcast.com, where you can find both the full long-form podcast like this, as well as our new shorts in audio form. You can find us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe for the audio only. Rate us and review us on those platforms. And our YouTube channel is youtube.com/tiltcastshorts with a Z, where you'll find the video version of this podcast and our new shorts. And look for us on Facebook and X as well.
All right, y'all. See you next time.
Peace.